It is a joy to be here with all of you. I want to start with a little delightful story that probably a lot of you have heard, if not most of you. And it's about two shoe salesmen that are sent out from their business to a third world country. And the first one arriving there surveys the situation and immediately gets a message back to his head office saying, send airline ticket immediately, no potential here, nobody's wearing shoes. And then the second shoe salesman, he surveys the situation and immediately sends a message back to his head office and says, great potential here, send enormous inventory, nobody wears shoes. And often that story is told to reveal sort of being optimistic versus being pessimistic. But I want to take it and slant it in terms of what today's topic is, in the idea that does God hide the truth? It really depends on how we're able to see through the filters and the veils of what are placed in our lives from our own previous choices, which is our karma. Because often, well, we have to begin with this premise from the Indian teachings that God is woven as the fabric throughout all of creation. And it really comes down to, for a lot of us in the West, I don't particularly mean all of you in this room, but a lot of people object to the premise that there's a God. I was reading recently that there is a growing momentum of atheist churches. It seems a little bit unusual and funny from our perspective, but there was an article that mentioned two of these churches that were run by men that had been Protestant ministers. And they felt because of the dogmas within their setting that they'd been a part of, that they really were turned away from that expression of God. But in looking through the article, it displayed that these churches that have been formed long for something more. The people that are coming are longing for something more. And so the way that we would read it is that they would be coming for satsang, of coming together to have a shared experience and a shared direction. Satsang means that fellowship with something larger than ourselves, with others that seek that. Actually, satsang really means something that they probably wouldn't tune into, because sat means the truth or God. But if you leave it at its satsang, meaning that it's fellowship with other truth seekers with truth, then it actually applies to them. But there is that seeking for something more, even from these people that are conjoining together in churches, that their premise is being atheistic. Because it's really the filters that we have on what we call God that really prevents us from experiencing that. This topic is, does God hide from truth? We were kidding yesterday that, well, indeed, God may be hiding his truth from me, so I can't give my sermon today. But really, in reality, that's just my part of it. God is able to act, to speak, to move through each one of us according to how much we're open to that experience. It has nothing to do with God. God is always there, as I said, the fabric that's woven through all of creation. And so it's more that we want to be with that openness along with discernment. Another funny story is, I don't know if you remember the Pink Panther movies with Peter Sellers. He plays the role of Inspector Clouseau. And there's always this one scene that I've remembered from the very first time I saw the movie, is that Clouseau is hunting down someone, and he goes to the Swiss Alps, and he goes into this hotel where there is a lobby, a reception desk, and there's an older man that's sort of snoozing at the desk, and Clouseau, in his French accent, says, he sees a dog lying down, and so he says to the desk clerk, "Does your dog bite?" And the guy's not awake, so he repeats it, "Does your dog bite?" And the man says no and shakes his head. So Clouseau bends down to pet the dog, and the dog jumps up and bites him. And Clouseau says angrily to the clerk, I thought you said your dog does not bite. That's not my dog. Often our approach isn't aimed in the right direction. And so by missing the point, as the great yoga master Patanjali says in his Yoga Sutras, is a real dilemma, is really an obstacle for us. And really it's more that we refine what we're really doing in our experience in life. Because if we refine and get to the subtleties of who we are, it allows us to feel and experience the subtleties of life around us. It's not that the chaos or the coarseness or the roughness of life around us isn't there as well, but even in those situations, in those experiences, we bring a refinement to it. You know, the word noble has been changed somewhat in our English language usage, but what it really reflects is not a class strata that somebody's a nobility and others are serfs under the nobility. That's a valid experience and expression of the word. But the word noble applied to a person really, in a sense, emphasizes the refinement, that they're opening up to who they are on those more subtle levels of their awareness, their consciousness, and their experience. Because even the same experience can be very different for the next person beside you and the next person, so on. But part of the difficulty is that we can appraise this concept of God from only an anthropomorphic perspective, meaning only from our human limitation. And I think these atheist pastors or ministers, whatever they're called, I think have picked up on that, that they're seeking something more, but they disdain what that limitation of this concept of God. And so, you know, I always remember with fond appreciation this saying attributed to Swami Vivekananda, who was the foremost disciple of the great master Ramakrishna in India. But he said that it's a blessing to be born into a religion, but unfortunate to die in one. Now, some people have said, have quoted it saying it's a blessing to be born in one and a curse to die in one. But I think that wouldn't have been what he would have said. It wouldn't have been that dramatic, that it was really bad if you stayed in your religion. He was really emphasizing that religion is a way to support our spiritual awakening. It isn't the end of our experience of the divine. It's really something to create a framework. And so you can see why being born into a situation where there's a nurturing energy around exploring that, just having the idea of God in one's life, is very, very real as a positive step as we grow in childhood. But if we continue to be always in that limited idea of the dogmas, you know, it's said that dogmas aren't really the problem. It's being dogmatic about the dogmas that are the problem. And what that means is dogma is like, in a sense, a way of looking at life. And in this case, with religion, it's looking at God and so forth. And dogmas have become more associated with being dogmatic. But in a sense, that's a steeper slide down the hill. And so we want to appreciate, perhaps as a child, the dogmas are there, that we can use as springboards to move past those dogmas, so we don't slide down the slippery slope of dogmatism, but we open up to the experience of really deeply not only hearing about God or the divine, not only appreciating God and the divine, but knowing God and the divine. And do we know God? We were just listening to a recording of Swami Kriyananda 2 days ago, coming down here from Ananda Village. And Swami Kriyananda asked that question of himself in this talk. Can I say I have found God? And his humility and honesty was there. He said, I'm not entirely sure, but I know I feel the experience of something greater than my own self. And that's a wonderful way to make it real, where you don't have to leap across into some belief system, but to use the beliefs, that experience, to really move forward past those beliefs. You know, it's interesting. I read this book that had some experiments or surveys with people. And they asked a variety of different groups to draw God. Very interesting exercise. And a whole variety of things were expressed there. Some people left it blank, meaning, you know, it's more than anything we can ever capture. Some people drew a more abstract impression, swirling colors, or maybe the sun, or the vast skies. And some people drew a more personal reflection of what they call God. You know, it may have been Jesus, Krishna, in our case, maybe Yogananda. But it was interesting. And I was pondering about this, and I thought, you know, I think for those, this is my sense, for those of us that are exploring more of that relationship of God in our lives, I think it comes more naturally to us, and maybe not to all of us, that God is expressed as the abstract and the personal. And that's really what Yogananda emphasized, that we have that balance, that it becomes more of a natural connection for us. It's not that we intend to say, I'm going to keep God abstract, or my intention is to completely personalize the divine in some meaningful form. I think what happens for us as we grow, as we deepen that inward connection through deepening meditation, for instance, that there's a natural relationship that happens for us personally. Some of us, the ratio may lean to more abstract, a little bit of personal connection. Some people may have much more of the personal experience of the divine and less of an abstract. But Yogananda said both are important. If you have that personal emphasis of not only just emphasizing it, but experiencing the divine personally, always remember there's this universal aspect that's beyond any consideration. And for those that hearken to the abstract and feel that's their reality, that's the touch they have, to add that part that makes it real in a personal way, and that doesn't mean even relating to a form of the Jesus, Krishna, or Yogananda image, but more in the sense we have appreciation for that as an instrument for the divine. I remember years ago, I'd been meditating for some years and had come to Ananda village for some programs. And I returned back to Canada where I resided at that time. And I started a meditation group for Ananda. This is when very few meditation groups were in existence for Ananda. But I had this very intense challenge with my family, that we were gathered together for, I think it was Easter or some family gathering, and one of my siblings just took advantage of that situation to tear into me, to really just be super hypercritical of my choice of being involved with this spiritual path. She was married to a Lutheran pastor, so that gave it some of that filter, but it was her tendency to be naturally cynical. She just had that as a force in her life of being reactive in a cynical way to what life offered to her. And so at the family dinner, she, in front of everyone else in my family, she just really just started attacking me verbally. And certainly the energy behind it was as equal to those words that carried that expression. And for whatever reason, they hit to the core of who I was. And what she was saying, what she was challenging, was the concept of the guru-disciple relationship. But for whatever reason, it caught me to the core of my heart. And I just had to leave. And I went home in tears. And I went to my meditation space crying from just really being unsure. It had hit just to the core of my experience of the spiritual path. It was very strong. And the dilemma was that what was being challenged was my relationship to Yogananda and our line of gurus. So I felt, well, I couldn't pray to them. It was just an odd kind of thing. So I just prayed to, as best I could feel, the presence of God. And slowly as I offered myself into that experience, it wasn't that I had a vision, but I felt deeply, and this may seem odd, I felt the touch of light. That doesn't really make sense logically, but that's part of the problem with our minds, is that it doesn't really comprehend a lot of things that are true. But I just started to feel that deepening calmness, that deep reality of this feeling of an effulgence. And first it was just a tiny little speck of light. And then I could feel that it was opening up to me. And likewise, I was opening up to that light. And then it just became that I was that experience. I wasn't here and there was the light. It just became my experience. And I knew at that point the truth of my spiritual journey, of being a disciple to this great ray of light through Yogananda and these gurus, that I had the certainty that I no longer felt that I ever had to prove that, especially to my sister. But what it also caused me to do was to feel that God was also in my sister. That I opened up, and from that day on, I prayed for her every day. And that was, you know, 36, 37 years ago, that every day I've nurtured her with the presence of that blessing of the divine. In whatever way she's open to receive it, even if it's restrained by whatever dogmas she holds, I knew that God wouldn't hide from opening up to my sister in a more expansive way. And interestingly enough, over the years, I don't think she's ever come to accept the guru thing, but she and I have had really good conversations about meaningful things. And so when we talk about God hiding the truth, it really is that our part to go inside, to come to a deeper sense of who we are, that's where God lives. And then we experience, we know with greater certainty, with greater surety, that God is in everything. That we can see, as both the affirmation and the songs and the reading from the rays of the one light express, that God is in the flowing brooks. God is in the roaring wind blowing upon the mountains. God is in the gentle breeze on a flower. All these things we then recognize our own experience of being in the divine through that expression, which means God never hides, because God is always with us. God is always in life itself as we open up to it. So let's take a moment and meditate on this.